everyone. My name is Belinda Granger, and I'm the professional liaison for Challenge Family. I'm also known throughout the triathlon world as being a bit of a mother hen to the pro athletes. Of course, given the current circumstances, I've been thinking about the athletes a lot lately. So we came up with the idea of Coffee Calls with Belinda, which basically gives me and you an opportunity to check in with them all and see how they're all going. So welcome to the official Challenge Family podcast. I think it's time for a coffee. Okay, and welcome back to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I am on the phone this afternoon with Laura Siddle, all the way from the UK. Now, I believe she's in the UK. Laura, is that correct? Are you in the UK or what? It's difficult to keep up where you are around the world these days.
I am in the UK at the moment, yes. And it's actually, I'm looking out the window, it's blue sky and sunny, which is very rare for the UK at the moment.
I'm not sure I believe you. I might need to get some photo evidence of that later on after this call.
I'd love to say it's the wine talking, but I'm just on coffee because it is morning time for me, but I'm hoping you've got a glass of wine at least drinking for me.
Well, it's funny you should say that because as you know, it is after 5 o'clock. It's now 5:35 p.m. in Noosa in Australia, and I have a rule, and it's a very hard rule, that I am not allowed to start my first glass of wine until after 5 o'clock. Set that rule, otherwise things could get ugly very quickly around here. So if it's usually the last coffee is before four, but the first red wine is after five. So you are right. I have already showered and I have a glass of red wine beside me, but I hope you have a cup of coffee beside you.
I do have a cup of coffee. It was, and talking about wine, it was, I think it got to 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon and I was thinking, is it too early for a wine?
You are not alone there. I can't tell you how many messages I have received from Beth McKenzie saying, is it 1 o'clock yet? And I've looked, I thought, well, what time is it? And I've looked, I'm like, it's 1:55. I'm like, oh no, I think you need to give it at least another hour or two, Beth, steady up there. But yeah, we have little jokes about it on most days. Just anything you can do to get through this crazy time.
Now,
now, Laura, you're back home in the UK. Did you think that this is where you would be at this particular point in time or this particular time of the year?
No, I didn't. So I haven't lived in the UK for, gosh, about 13 years now. And apart from coming back for the odd sort of few days holiday and visiting family, I've not spent any time here. I've definitely not ever trained as a triathlete, let alone professional athlete. And I mean, I packed my bags on, we saw each other. I packed my bags, you know, the middle of February, drove yes. over to Challenge Wanaka, was at Challenge Wanaka, not racing, but obviously was over there. And then literally the day after Challenge Wanaka, flew to the States for a five week training camp with my coach, Julie Dibbins, and the squad out there. And so I was kind of only expecting to be away from New Zealand for 5 weeks. And now here I am back in the UK for kind of the unforeseeable future at the moment. And I did have a bit of a panic yesterday I'm an athlete. Most of my life I spend in training clothes anyway. But I did kind of look around going, oh, it's fine. You know, I've got training clothes. It's only what I'd normally wear anyway. And then went, you did only pack for 5 weeks of training camp and being a training camp. So you don't have very much other selection. And it's interesting times. Having said that, I'm living with my sister and her family. So who are in the next door village to my mum and dad, but mum and dad are over 70 and they are fit and healthy, touch wood, and in a super good place. But we just didn't know with me coming back from the States and things like that, whether it wouldn't be necessarily the best idea for me to be going and living with them. So my sister very kindly volunteered and she's got a great setup, which I'm sure we can go into. But the thing I was Perfect. Saying was that my niece, who is 11, actually, I hand her a lot of my old sports kit and all of my old clothes. So everyone, all my sisters have been laughing, saying, you can just borrow back from Maisie.
They'll start calling you an Indian giver. You don't want that. Oh, you poor thing. I know what it's like. Oh, so move back to the UK. It's funny you touched on that, having your parents living so close, and I know you're close to your parents. I've met your beautiful parents many times. I was talking to Dylan McNeice not too long ago, and he's in the same position where he lives in Christchurch. He's only about 100 metres up the road from his parents, but he's not able, with the strict rules that they have in New Zealand at the moment, he's not even allowed to go over and see his parents, go over to their house. He's, whether he wanted to or not, whether he was thought it was safe or not, it's just not allowed. And that must be such a strange feeling.
It's been really weird, because obviously when I'm normally back in the UK, I do stay with mum and dad, and obviously they travel to some of the races, and so see them sort of a few times through the year. And now I think mum and dad were, and all my family, they were happy I was going to be back in the UK over this period. I think when I sort of had to break it to my mum that probably wasn't going to be living with them, I think she did find, she understood, but found it a bit tough. Now then being back, but not necessarily being able to see them. I mean, I have been round to their house, because I did try and pick up some stuff, but we did it where, you know, they were at one side of the house and I went in through a different door and grabbed some stuff and came out and then told them to go and clean everything down. And I was obviously wiping things down and hand sanitizer. And then I've seen them from, like, we've gone round and we stood in the garden with them sort of standing in the house and so at distance. So, I mean, that's been good. I can kind of seen them, but it's been hard because then you're seeing them, but you can't have any physical contact, and it almost makes it worse, kind of thing.
Exactly. It's like dangling a carrot.
Not
being able to eat it. I'm the same with my parents. You know, obviously my dad is turning 80 this year. And so he's reasonably fit, but he's got a few ailments that, you know, at the end of the day, regardless of whether they're fit, exactly. So when I go over there, because obviously my sister, they own quite a big property, and my sister's house is, and her partner's house is just down the back of that property. So I go over to do some workouts with my sister a couple of times a week. And again, same as you, talking to my parents, I'm outside on the lawn, and they're behind the screen door, and it just feels weird. And I don't like it at all. I'd rather just talk to mum on the phone, to be honest. So,
Well, I'm trying to make that effort as well, even though I'm what, round the corner, so to speak, now compared to where I normally am around the world. But even ringing mum and dad every day, or Skyping every day, just to have that and contact for them as well, like,
absolutely,
you know, they're really you know, like I said, they're in their 70s, touch wood, they're fit and healthy, and but they're really social people. Like, mum would be out playing tennis 4 or 5 times a week, and they have their Friday night drinks at the pub with friends, you know, with friends, and they're friends that have been friends of theirs for 70 years, and their parents and parents were friends and stuff like that. So they are, and then, you know, we obviously, it's Easter coming up, they were that's what is funny, like, my family go down to Cornwall every Easter, and it's a place that's very, like, got good place in our hearts for the whole family. And this is like the first time I've been back in the UK over Easter for years, and of course we can't even go down to Cornwall. I'm like,
that's awful. Luke McKenzie's dad turned 70, I think, yesterday or the day before, and he had a huge party planned, of course, that my parents were going to go to, and that got cancelled. And you could just see they're all fine with it, but, you know, deep down, I mean, a 70th birthday party is a big deal. So I really felt for them.
Yeah, it's mum and dad's, gosh, now I'm being put on the spot. I've put myself on the spot here. I could have put my own foot in my mouth. It's their 50th wedding anniversary in July, so in a couple of months' time. And obviously we'd got a relatively big family party get together. I mean, that may still happen. I doubt it, but let's fingers crossed. But yeah, for them, that's, you know, that's a big thing for them as well. So
I think we did sort of a
family, like everyone's doing now, but, you know, a family Skype or a family Zoom meeting the other day. But, and then, like, my other little niece Molly, who's 5, she lives with my other sister's daughter, and they're in Derby, which again isn't too far away, but she was getting all confused because she thought everyone was in the same room apart from her and everything.
Oh,
and,
no.
And then obviously just trying to teach sort of parents technology and get them on Zoom, so you know, so mum can do her Pilates class but via Zoom meeting on a Wednesday kind of thing, and that sort of thing's been funny when you can't sort of physically show them what to do.
Mum's the same with her with her yoga class. And I mean, thank God we have Zoom. I don't know what we did without it. I mean, honestly, it's been the greatest thing on earth. I think everyone's using it for an array of different things, whether it be exercise or parties. I know one of my friends in Austria has been doing, they've been having virtual parties every Friday night, and they all get dressed up. And it's hilarious. Brilliant. Yeah, I love it.
Oh, that's cool.
Now, listen, getting back, let's go back to the very start with you, because obviously we first met back in Kona in Hawaii. It was actually Hawaii 70.3. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. Yeah, of course it was. Yes.
But I can't remember the year. So you have to.
2013.
Okay. And you were still racing age group then, yes?
Yes. Yes.
And I think I remember that was a breakthrough race for you, because I think I remember you were second overall that day. Was that right?
I was second. I mean, obviously, and I, you know, age group racing is different to the pro racing, but yeah, I crossed the line behind you, and you were racing pro and I was racing age group that year.
I tell you what, you might have been racing age group, but that doesn't matter. You were still giving me a bit of a scare. I remember having to look behind quite a few times to make sure you weren't getting me. But
I think the commentator got quite confused when I came across the line.
Well, actually, I think the commentator got quite confused when I came across the line, because, you know,
Brie went the wrong way.
Yeah. And I remember thinking that I was actually second, and it wasn't until someone said, no, you're first. I'm like, no, I know I'm in second place. But I hadn't realised that Brie had gone the wrong way. That was a pretty weird year, that was for sure. But how long after that race did you decide that it was time to turn pro, or to at least try and see how you would go as a professional athlete?
Yeah, so that race was, where was it, sort of end of May, June time, I think, of 2013. And I kind of started be thinking in 2013 that there was a potential to turn pro, but I'd been racing age grouper and mainly over the Olympic and sprint distance at that point. So that race in Honu, the 70.3, was my first proper attempt at a 70.3, I'd say. So, and having moved back up to that distance with a view to going, this is the distance that I'm going to have to be racing if I turn pro. So let's give it a proper crack. Mm-hmm. And so obviously had a good race there, and that qualified me. It actually qualified me for Kona and for the 70.3 world champs. And I turned the Kona spot down on that race, because again, I'd been training for halves and the full distance, wanting to do that properly, it wasn't sort of on the radar yet. And also I'd got the focus at that point of I wanted to go to 70.3 Worlds in Vegas in September. And then it was the ITU World Championships in London the week after Vegas. And I hadn't ever raced in the UK before doing triathlon, because I'd started it when I was living in Australia. So I wanted to go back to London, race in the UK, and also I was age group world champ from the past three years. So at that point doing Honu, it was kind of a great validation of, okay, I might be doing something in the right direction. I've won overall female amateur. On paper, I'm ranking up there with the pros. Let's go to Vegas. Let's do the world champs there. Let's go to London, and then we'll kind of assess things after that. And it was after Vegas and London that I did decide to go for it, and I got my pro license. And I think my first pro race was Noosa, which was Olympic distance. So again, not really where I was going to be heading, but you know, it's just such a great race. And and I actually did it with a good friend, so Kim Jenker, I can never pronounce the surname. We both raced age group in And actually that's her maiden name, not her married name, but we both raced age group in Vegas, and then we both turned pro at a similar time, and we both raced Noosa for the first time as a pro.
As a pro?
Yeah.
It is a good race, though. It's still one of my favourite races of the year.
Oh, so, it has to be.
Yeah. And I'm hoping, because it's so far away and, you know, not till the beginning of November, that we have got this, we've sorted it, the world has sorted its shit out, and we are actually going to be back racing in November. Let's hope.
Yes. Let's hope. Kim Coogan.
Kim Coogan, of course.
That. Oh, my God. They're going to kill me now for not remembering her married name. Pete's going to kill me.
Hey, we're forgiven of everything at this particular point in time. Yeah. There's no mistakes can be made. Now, you were based in Bondi, so my old haunting grounds, back in the day. So when you first turned pro, you were training in Bondi in Sydney. Is that correct?
Yeah, initially. So, yeah, I moved over to Australia at the end of 2007, beginning 2008, with my corporate job then at the time. Had no idea what, and that was moving to Sydney. So I went there with my job and was living there, had no idea what triathlon was. But as you do when you get to Australia, most people do triathlon, like they would go for a Sunday walk. So got kind of sucked in, and so then was living and training started with the Bondi Fit and with Spot Anderson, and very much your old training ground and things like that, and Herbie and all of those old guys that were around there and are still around these days.
They're good value. I'm still keep in contact with Herbie. He comes over to the Laguna Phuket Triathlon in Phuket, Thailand every year. Yeah. He's hilarious. Has never changed. It just makes me laugh, Laura, because you started exactly where I started as a triathlete, you know, part of the Brat Club, training with the same people. I got into it for exactly the same reason. Just it's impossible not to get into triathlon when you come from that, when you're based in that area. So it's just funny to think that my old hunting grounds are yours.
Yeah, I know. That's it. And it was funny because, you know, obviously I was very new into the sport, but then as I got more into it and got to know more people, and then your name would come up, and then getting like with the Brat Club and things like that. So, and it was a great place to be and living and working, and then also being able to do the sport at that point as a hobby and being in Sydney was just amazing. And, I got my pro card end of 2013, beginning of 2014, and was still in Sydney at the time. And I'd gone down to 3 days a week at work, which I had a fantastic boss who was allowed me to do that and was really supportive. But I think I just kind of felt that if I was going to do this properly, because I was a lot older than most, I guess, at that age, you know, I was at this point 33, I think it was, because I'd only started the sport at 29. And I just thought, trying to do this full time in, which is what I wanted to do, if I was going to give it a proper crack, I needed to commit fully. Trying to do that full time in Sydney, if I stopped working, with the cost of living over there, and also just it was a largely age group environment, and I wanted to be with other professionals in an environment where I could learn. And so I looked at a load of coaches and spoke to Darren Smith at the time, who was, you know, fantastic Australian coach in the ITU world. And he gave me some great advice, and really off the back of that, sought out Mac Dixon over in San Francisco.
Okay. Yep. That's right.
Went over and spoke to him and sort of, I guess, had a week's interview or trial. And then, literally sort of came back, resigned from my job, sold everything I owned. And then, moved to the States beginning of April, I think probably around this time, actually, April, May 2014.
Wow. What a huge move.
I remember I had been in San Francisco a week, and Matt sent me down to Wildflower Triathlon as my first race over there, just a week after being in the country.
Hey, let's be honest, not a bad first race to do, though. Wow.
Unreal. Yeah, I mean, again, one of those iconic races of the sport, and would love to see it back and surviving as well.
And of course, with Spot Anderson, I think he is still coaching. still. I haven't seen Spock in a long time.
He is still coaching. Yeah, I mean, obviously, as with many, his coaching is very much based on group sessions and that group environment and a great community. And obviously, so he's been hit, like many people have, pretty hard at the moment. But yeah, he's still coaching. He's still trying to beat everyone out the water. I'm sure he'd probably still say he is beating everyone out the water in the surf, body surfing championships.
But you know what a lot of people don't realize is that Lisa Norden, back yes. when I was training back down there, Lisa Norden actually started her triathlon yes. career with Spot Anderson and spent a huge amount of time living in Bondi and training around Bondi when she was just starting out. So
Spot taught her to swim.
Yeah, I still remember. I remember meeting Lisa when she was just a teenager, and to see where she started and where she progressed to is nothing short of, you know, miraculous. And she's one of the best Olympic distance athletes in the world, and now of course she's a very, very good half distance athlete. So some pretty good athletes. Pretty good athletes have come out of Little Bondi. I think it's not bad.
I think they probably hit. Hit above their weight. I don't know if that's what you call it. I don't know. It's just, Australia. And for me at that time, Sydney, it's just, and the same, you know, for Noosa as well. And probably so in Noosa. I think as an age grouper living in Sydney, it was just amazing because I had my corporate job, but then I just had these fantastic beaches and this lifestyle of being outside and training. And, you know, you've got that in Noosa as well. And I just think that's such a, it's so lucky being in Australia and New Zealand and to have that sort of lifestyle and stuff. Yeah.
And going back to New Zealand, glad you brought that up again. Obviously, if you were to say where you spend the biggest chunk of the year, it would be in Christchurch in New Zealand, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it is now. So I kind of based myself with Matt in San Francisco for a couple of years, but I just never really, San Francisco is a great city, but it's a bit like Sydney. It's ridiculously expensive for a new pro with no money or no earnings. So I ended up going to New Zealand to work with Paul Buick, who was working with Matt at the time as a cycling coach. And I just got back to the Southern Hemisphere, and it was just like this weight came off my shoulders, and I just felt so much more relaxed. And so, then from there, sort of started spending more and more time in Christchurch. I guess now I sort of split my time about six months between Christchurch in New Zealand and then Girona in Spain. But over the last, 4 or 5 years, gosh, crazy now, a lot of time has been in Christchurch. And I was when I was in the States and all this was kicking off, and I was thinking, like, where do I need to get back to? And actually wasn't able to get back to New Zealand because I'm on the wrong kind of visa. But a lot of my stuff is still there being looked after by various people, and hope to at some point be able to get back there depending, but my visa expires in 6 days, so I need to cross that bridge. I mean, I hope I should be able to get back in on my British passport and now be on a visitor's visa rather than a resident. But they were restricting people. But New Zealand. And again, I love it. It's very similar. It's super relaxed and chilled place. Great training. Just again, that sort of love of outdoors and activity and good coffee. Always priority. Judge my places on the coffee.
Good coffee and good red wine. You're the same as me. I'm a simple person, Laura. Like simple things. But you brought up another question that I was going to ask you about Girona. So obviously that's become a bit, as we talk about Noosa and Boulder being triathlon meccas around the world, Girona's become a bit of a triathlon mecca as well. I mean, probably mainly thanks to Jan Frodeno, obviously basing himself there and now, of course, living there pretty much year round. But there are lots of other triathletes that are basing themselves there during the European summer as well.
Yeah, more and more so. So when I first went a few years ago, it was still predominantly cyclists there, and obviously just huge amounts of pro cycling teams, and there were a few triathletes, obviously Jan and David McNamee, and then some of the ITU squads, but they based themselves more sort of down the road at Banyoles. So Girona is still pretty quiet from a triathlete perspective. But yeah, in that, like the last summer when I was there, it was a lot of the teams have now literally are actually moving into Girona. And I know, you know, so many people I've been speaking to the back end of last year were saying, yep, we're coming to Girona in the summer and everything like that. And to be honest, I was literally a day away from booking a flight to Girona to have my shoulder replated by the surgeon. Right. And I was speaking because that's where I had it plated last year. And so I thought, right, if I'm going to go again, I've got to have it plated again.
Let's go back to
the same surgeon. And I was literally about to book a flight there. And I was talking to friends over there. And I said, look, and things were just starting to kick off. So I kind of rang them and I was like, look, what's the situation? Are they going to be closing things? And I'm thinking about this surgery. And they're like, no, we think you're probably good for another week, 10 days kind of thing. So if you could get back here, get the surgery, et cetera, you're probably going to be okay. Literally the next day, things went through the roof and everything shut, borders were shut, they went into lockdown and everything like that. And I was like, I am so glad
that you didn't
book that flight. Oof.
Wow.
Or not even book, but just even like get there and then find that surgery was cancelled but then I couldn't leave, sort of thing. So I mean, they're going through a real tough time at the moment. I think they are they're in their third week of complete lockdown. They can't even go out to exercise. They can walk their dogs, but now that's been restricted to like a 200 meter radius around their house. They can only get their food, but even going to the supermarket, they get stopped by the police and say, could you not go to one nearer, or why are you out and all that. I mean, yeah, really feel for those guys.
Yeah, I've obviously we've got quite a few of the Challenge Family race directors from Spain, and one of our main guys from Challenge Salud, Juan and Fernandez. Gorgeous man. And of course he was one of the first challenge events that had to be cancelled and postponed till later in the year. And speaking to him on a Monday night, and it's just honestly, it makes me want to cry sometimes. I think you know, I complain sometimes here, but we are in Australia, we're going through nothing compared to the likes of Italy or Spain. I literally can't even think of what their reality is like right now. It's that
I know. I mean, even compared to here in the UK, you know, although I have feelings it's going to change in the next few days, but at the moment we're still allowed out for, you know, one form of exercise a day. And obviously, you know, shops and medicine, although, you know, I wanted to go to the shop with my sister the other day and she was like, no, you know, it should be one of us. And I was like, yep, fair call. And so doing that kind of responsibly. But and lucky at the moment that we are allowed out for one form of exercise. So I've been using that as my running. But for Spain. But the thing that's impressed me about Spain is that you look at any professional athlete over there and they have not complained one bit.
No, I haven't
they
heard one.
They are all accepting it. They are like, and this is all, like, if you think about the number of pro cyclists who are there, the number of pro triathletes are there. And I heard the other day that Mario Mola, he doesn't even have a treadmill at home.
Wow.
So all he has is his bike. And he's potentially Olympic champion. And he is, but you don't see any of them complaining, and you don't see any of them abusing the rules, and they are all acting like role models and ambassadors and supporting it. And I think I think people should take note of that, and that's a real big thing to take on board.
Totally agree. I mean, obviously, I follow Jan Frodeno on Insta, and nothing but professionalism from all of the pros. And you know, I'm sure behind closed doors they have the little meltdowns, as they're allowed to.
We all are. Where's the wine?
That's right. Oh, we all have our different coping strategies. But yeah, you're dead right. And I hadn't even thought about it from that perspective. But you know, I haven't seen one negative at all. And they know they're all in it together. And the sooner we all get on board and do the right thing, hopefully the quicker this will all be done with. And I mean, there was some promising news that I did see today that they think that they may have a combination of antibiotics that is that does look like it's going to it's treating it correctly, that it is getting rid of it. I mean, obviously early days, but it's just little snippets of hope that we need just to get us through the next week or the next month, you know.
It's funny though, because you know, when you look at it from one point of view, it my life, okay, yeah, I'm in the UK and I haven't lived here for 13 years and I'm living with my sister and her family. And I'm sure at some point the shit's going to hit the fan and we're going to have an argument and all the kids are going to get bored of me because they've got Auntie Laura living with her and she's quite boring because she has a treadmill, which is exciting.
She's training all the time.
Because I panic bought a treadmill, not Lou Roll, and all this sort of thing. But actually my life isn't that different. Like normally, okay, I'm not going out riding my bike, but I'm still training. And okay, I'm not swimming, but I'm still training. And I'm then catching up on all the other stuff, the admin side of the sport that I'm doing. And quite often I live in a little bubble that is my triathlon world. And I don't read the news that lot. And I don't actually watch a lot of telly. So you kind of can go through a day or a couple of days forgetting what's going on.
That there is actually
the outside
a horrible thing happening.
Yeah, and life is fine. And I'm, you know, in the garden or whatever, and maybe on the odd occasion the sun is, I can see the sun in the UK and it is blue sky and not grey. And then like you'll flick onto social media and you'll go, oh shit, this is actually happening in the world out there and it's real. And it's, yeah, it's a bizarre kind of, like that reality of what's going on versus your own little life. And then you have these conversations. It's all, it's such a bizarre, weird time.
Well, I was going through my days by getting up every morning, turning on the news, being so depressed. No, being so depressed for the entire day, finally coming to terms with it by the afternoon, you know, with the help of a couple of glasses of wine, going to bed feeling quite good about my life and the world. And then that same bloody thing the next morning, get up. So I said, that's right, from here on in, 2 or 3 days a week, I'm not turning on the bloody news because I know what it's going to be. And I don't watch it. So particularly on the weekends, I refuse to watch any news on the weekends because I want the weekends to be what they've always been, which is time with, used to be time with family and friends. Now it's time with my little family, which is my husband and my two dogs, my sister. And then, okay, during the week, I'll catch up and see what's going on in the world. But it's the only way to do it. Otherwise, you just end up spiraling out of control. And it's just, now I see why people get into this whole big thing of depression, because it's freaking depressing.
I probably do it a worse way around, because I'll look at social media and I'll catch up on, I'll go, oh, you probably should read about what's going on. So I do it at night before I go to bed. And then of course you go to bed in a massive stress. Not a good idea. I did see there was something that you posted the other day on Instagram, a very funny caption, which had like a coffee mug with a running baton, handing it to a wine glass and going, this is how I feel every day, just the coffee going to the wine. And I'm like, so it's, again, living with my sister and, you know, I'm meant to be the athlete. And then I get to the end of every day and I'm like,
I need a
glass of wine. And then, but I don't say anything because I'm like, oh, they don't seem to be drinking, or they don't. And I don't want to be a bad influence on them. And then I'm thinking, you're the one that's promoting it. And it was funny, like the first few days I was here, it was a bit like I was here for that short sort of holiday time. And then I think, you know, as the weeks go on and it's kind of got to be, okay, right, now this is long term and you're more housemate than holiday guest sister. Maybe we should. But yeah, I'm the one that's getting to the end of the day going, oh, I would just like a glass of wine. But then I don't say anything because I'm meant to be there.
you need to be here with me. You need to be here with me. It would be no problem getting that glass of wine, let me tell you.
We've got a group ride next Friday with the JD crew. So it'll be morning time for them and then it'll be afternoon for me, and Matt Bottrell's going to lead it and stuff. And he's over here, and it's Easter Friday, and it's about, I think the ride will be about 4 o'clock for me. And I messaged Julie going, I realize I'm going to be drinking wine while we do this ride on Friday.
Easter Friday? Of course you should be.
Friday night, 4 o'clock.
I hope she understands. Far out. Well, it's funny, you know, it was actually an age group athlete, quite a well-known age group athlete in Australia, Jo Coombe, who originally put that Insta post up, and I did steal it from her because it was so appropriate to my life right now.
The other one you put up, which I copied as well, and I want to repost, is the it's a wine glass as a mask, and I'm actually doing it now, which you can't see, as a face mask with red wine, and I just want to repost it saying, do they also do this in bubble format? Because let's just get on the champagne.
I'm pretty sure we could do it in any format we wanted. That's the beauty of this. But it's I was actually talking to Steph Hansen from witsup.com, and I know you know Steph very, very well, yeah. Very good friend of ours, and also another lovely lady from Melbourne, Jan Cameron, who I'm do you know Jan as well? Jan Cameron?
I don't know Jan.
She's a great lady. And she actually came up with the idea, because I think we're all in the same boat, the three of us at the moment, with the coffee straight into the red wine. And we thought we'd come up with a new sport. And it's actually the transition. So we've been timing ourselves. I kid you not. We started it yesterday. Timing ourselves, making a coffee. And we had to film it so we didn't cheat. Making a coffee. And then going straight into opening a bottle of wine, pouring the a glass of wine, no spillage. If there's spillage, then that's
down it.
A time penalty. and I think Steph and I are even. We got it to 1:10, so 1:10. We've got it down to. But I won't be happy till I get it to sub one. So I've got some work to do. But this is a real thing, Laura. This is a real thing. It's going to be a thing, because no one can go out and race. I mean, I know they've got this bloody virtual racing that everyone's doing. But this is much better, much more appropriate, and with how the world's feeling right now, I think our sport's going to really take off.
Yeah, look, yeah, I think it's going to be a winner. I think we're going to see I'll tell you what, you lot can race. I'll do the live commentary, and you we'll can. Have you we, on like right. Skype versions.
We actually are looking for commentators. We're just going to come up with the rules. So there's a couple of stand down penalties. We're still trying to work out what's a stand down penalty, what's actually a timed penalty in the penalty box, because there will be penalty boxes, of course. And, you know, whether we go with cork or Stelvin, I mean, I said cork. I said it's got to be cork. Anyone can crack a Stelvin. Anyone can crack a Stelvin. 5-year-old child can crack a Stelvin. So we're still sorting through the rules, but we'll give us another few days and we'll have it down pat, and then we will release it to the world.
I think that sounds like a much better option for virtual racing.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure we're going to get much sponsorship behind it, but that's okay. I'll be happy if someone just sponsors me in coffee and wine. That's all I'm looking for.
I was going to say, I'd be more than happy if there was a coffee company and a vineyard that were going to sponsor me. I have been, my favorite wine in the world is Mount Difficulty, which is down in or just outside of Wanaka, and so I keep trying to plug them and get them to sponsor me.
Love it. No, that is very good wine. That's all right, we're gonna work on that, Laura. We're gonna work on that.
And then now, and then any one of the local, well, and not local, but any one of the coffee roasters, again, more than happy to actually, there's three. I can do a wine company, that would be great. A coffee bean or a coffee or a cafe or a roasters, that would be good. And then SodaStream, that would be my third one. Just, you know, keep it all balanced between alcohol, coffee, caffeine, and water hydration.
Yeah, that's good. I like your thinking. I like that you're taking this sensible approach. That's very important.
Exactly.
Very important. You are a pro athlete.
well, I say sensible approach with my SodaStream. I actually made sparkling wine with my SodaStream.
I saw that. You know, we have a SodaStream. I didn't even know you could do that. So, you know, I learned something new that day. That was good to know, just in case.
Yeah. Thing you have to remember though, when you make sparkling wine with a SodaStream, is when you do the water and you pump the gas in and then you can take the water bottle out straight away, do not do that with the wine.
So
you have to put the wine in the SodaStream bottle, put it in, put the gas in, and then leave it, do not touch it, for a good 3 or 4 minutes, otherwise you have that podium explosion, which is at these times is very much a waste.
Yes, it is. You know, we're not into waste. No, thank you. No. We'll save that for the end of the year when we're hopefully all back attending events.
Yeah.
Now, speaking about coaches, and you were talking about doing a ride on Easter Friday, your new coach, Julie Dibbo, great woman, love her to pieces, is becoming a real, like, she's becoming, has got this amazing stable of athletes now, of which you are now a part. But what a great coach that she's becoming. in a very, like, I'm sure she doesn't think it's a short amount of time, but really, at the end of the day, she hasn't been coaching that long, but she just seems to be doing such a spectacular job.
And just goes about it in Dibbo's way of quiet, out the limelight, doesn't want kind of any of that, and yet is probably, I don't know whether it's insulting or not to say probably one of the underrated coaches out there that doesn't necessarily get the kudos. But anyway, she's had great results with athletes. There's probably a couple of regrets I have in life, and I don't tend to have many regrets. And this isn't necessarily a regret, but I wish I'd moved to her probably about 12, 18 months ago. And that's nothing against, like, I had a great relationship with Matt, and we did some fantastic things. He took me from age grouper to where I was as a professional, and we had some great results. But just, I think, the time was needed for a change, and I probably should have done it. And now, like, having moved to Julie and the support that she's given me through the last few months and that's the only thing that I find frustrating, is we were literally just starting to get going, and then it was about 4 or 5 weeks into training and just starting to see form and fitness coming, and just started to get excited, and I flipping went and decided to break my collarbone again. But the support that she's given me through that has been unreal. And then, like, going out to Vegas for the camp and even being in Boulder, and I couldn't train, and I was training, but I was on the indoor bike.
That's right.
Doing things, but not training properly, but just being out there with Julie, with Katie and Caitlin, who like help her with the coaching, and then with being with the squad, and that sort of environment was just brilliant. And it's been really, I don't think I would be getting through one injury and two current situation in the pretty good place that I am if I wasn't with Julie.
I can totally agree. And look, I remember seeing you for a while when you were questioning whether it was time, it's difficult though. I don't think a lot of athletes don't realize it's a difficult thing when you have a relationship with one coach, and it's got nothing to do with someone being right or wrong or otherwise, just sometimes a coaching relationship runs its course. Sebastian Kinlay will be the first one to tell you that when he changed coaches, and he didn't have a falling out with his old coach, it was just time to move on. I think we've all done it. I don't know a professional athlete that hasn't done it. And trying to find the perfect time, it's always going to be difficult. But the most important thing with you, Laura, is you did it, you know. So
yeah, the thing was, like, you know, I started my professional career with Matt. I've only ever had two coaches. I've had Spot Anderson, and then I've had Matt. And so I kind of, like, loyal, you know, when I'm with a coach, I'm loyal to them. And again, I got to that point of like, we both agreed it was time to move on, and it's all amicable. I still chat to Matt and everything like that, and have a lot of time and respect for him still. But we both knew it was time for a change. The thing that I found hard was that, you know, I am at the older end of the athlete scale, even though I still forget, I still feel so new to the sport, and I have to go, actually, you're not anymore. But I still feel young, new to the sport. But I am one of the older athletes as well, with getting into the sport late. Although I did hear that 2020, we're cancelling all birthdays, so that's a good thing. So I'm not turning age this year.
I was the first one to sign that petition.
Exactly. I'm going to sign it. But, you know, I got to that point where I was going, well, is it, you know, should I change? Because if I've only got a few years left as an athlete, and I don't know, you know, I hope I'm still racing for a few more years, especially now. I want to actually get to Absolutely. Be training properly with Julie and get to see what we can do. And that's exciting. But it was kind of like, you know, if I've only got a few years left, is it worth making that transition to a new coach? Because you have to go through a whole nother, it could take several months to get used to each other again. And have I got time for that? Or should I just see things out with where I am? But at the same time, there's that unknown of going, but if you don't move, you don't know what you're missing either.
No, that's right.
And so that was kind of that really hard decision. And also, I was wanting to be more face to face with a coach and be in a group environment. And I was prepared to move to coaches to do that. But the Boulder thing, which is where Julie was a real sticking point for me. So I was probably prepared to move a lot of places, but Boulder really was kind of where I didn't want to be. And I don't know whether that was just from the Boulder bubble almost, and whether it was everybody was there, or whether it was just having not had a great experience when I was in America the first time, and whether that sort of scarred me and that sort of thing. And so that was a real, that kind of was a stalling point in the conversations I was having with Julie, because on my list of what I was looking for in a coach was to be face to face and to be in a squad, and she was offering that, but just in a place I didn't want to be.
So why not Boulder? Because, you know, for most triathletes, Boulder's one of those places that you would absolutely want to go to.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I'd never been, so I guess I couldn't really judge. But what I think it was, partly it was because everybody was there, and I don't know whether that intimidates me, or I don't like it, or I do like to do things differently and be a bit of a from one extent, a lone wolf, even though I wanted to be in a squad. And two, I don't know whether, like I said, by the first few years when I'd moved to the States, it wasn't a particularly good experience for me. And I appreciate that with San Francisco and a completely different environment. But I think that had probably tarnished my view of being and living in America. And so that was kind of that struggle point of going, I'm not sure I want to be in Boulder. And also, you know, it was kind of like, yes, I'm prepared to move, but also I have a real, I'm just trying to, you know, I am so global and nomadic, but I've just kind of started this, getting this routine of 6 months in New Zealand, 6 months in Spain, and I have my close friends and my network in Christchurch, and I have my close friends and network in Girona. And again, at the time of life, do I want to be upping sticks and starting all that again? And yeah, all those things to think about. But you know, it was a chance. It came to the point where I was about to lose the opportunity to work with Julie, and there wasn't really any other coach that stood out for me. And I did talk to a few of the coaches, and I have a lot of respect, and I thank every one of those that gave me the time to talk to them. And I know I would have been good with any of them, but it was just something that with Julie that resonated with me a bit more. Yeah. But I was going to miss out on the chance if I didn't work out the Boulder situation. So we chatted and we said, like, yeah, let's start things. There was no pressure to move to Boulder, and I'm not, you know, as of now, I'm not moving to Boulder, but I have just come from 3 weeks in Boulder and absolutely loved it, even though with the limited training I could do. And I mean I haven't even started to explore, you know, I think I did one ride outside and that was it, and what a couple of hiking stuff. But I can't wait to get, and everyone's gonna laugh at this, as well as them all laughing that I'm now like an avid indoor trainer on the bike fan, having always said that second like things of how things would change. I can't wait to get back to Boulder, and I can't wait to get back to the squad, and I can't wait to train with Julie face to face and just see what we can do. And that's kind of what's exciting for me and keeping me going at the moment.
No, look, I understand it. And I get where you're coming from with the whole Boulder thing, because sometimes, you know, when you know every man and his dog's there, and triathlete in this case. But, you know, I spent 2 seasons training in Boulder back in the day, and I love it. And I'd love nothing more than to go back there. It's been a long time since I've been there, and I'm sure it's changed a lot since I was last there. But it is a very cool spot. So hopefully I'll get back there this year sometime.
Well, I need to go back now, because I want to go and see what Tim and Rinny's wine cellar's like.
Oh,
well, that's an invite yet.
That's the main reason I want to go back, let's be honest. I've already been given a free invite back there for that.
And I haven't yet met Dibs' dogs, and I haven't been to half the bakeries and the cafes yet that I need to go to, let alone any of the other training. And also, I'm also working with Kate Ligler, a strength coach, and she's now based in Boulder. So she's great work. She's fantastic working virtually. And we started that. I knew Kate when we were both living in San Francisco, but didn't work with her. but she's now moved to Boulder, and then we started working together at the back end of last year, just, you know, virtually as a strength coach. And so it was great being in Boulder and being able to like do sessions face to face with Kate, and she's just absolutely awesome. So that's another, you know, another kind of plus that I've got two of my coaching support networks there.
Oh, very cool. Yeah.
But don't worry, Vix, Nadine in Christchurch and everyone in Girona, I will still be coming and spending time there.
You're just adding one more place to the list. That's all right.
I know. I was starting to consolidate. My sister was laughing as well. I was starting to consolidate all my stuff. Like, you know, so we call it Shizzle, which is stands for shit that Sid left. And it's stuff that I leave. Stuff that I leave at various friends' houses around the world. So there was like some with friends in Sydney, and then Nadine's got a load, and Vic's now got a little bit where I live in Christchurch. And then I was trying to consolidate it just to sort of New Zealand, and then my mum and dad's back in the UK. But now, like, I left a few bits in Boulder before I came back, and then now I'm living at my sister's, so it's crept over to my sister's house, and it's all expanding again.
She's all over the place one more time. I love it.
I think I need to get t-shirts or something, or key rings, and give them to everyone who's got some shizzle.
It's got the shizzle. Oh, that's hilarious. Now, listen, just for our listeners, you talked about a broken wing, your broken collarbone. Can you just go through that again, because you obviously broke it twice.
Yes.
Once wasn't enough for you, Sid, was it? So you decided
I always like to do things properly, yeah.
Just take us, how did you do it the first time? Let's go back to the original break.
The first time, so just shy of 12 months ago. So I'd just done my transition from Southern Hemisphere to Northern Hemisphere, come off the back of Ironman Australia, and I normally that's like my last race, and then I moved to Girona for the summer in the Northern Hemisphere. So I'd head to Girona. I'd had a bit of a week off. Mum and Dad had been over for a few days with friends, which is fantastic. And I was on my first training ride back. It was 6 weeks to Roth. I was pumped. I'd felt in a good place. I was excited. It was Roth again, and I was sort of on a 4-hour ride out on the coast. Got sort of partway through the ride, it just got super, super windy, and like, again, people laugh because I always say how I love the wind and I love racing in the wind. And it got crazy windy, and I mean, so that, and okay, people were probably telling me this, but and when I spoke to people afterwards, they said, no, we were in cafes in the street and the bikes were getting blown down the street. It was that kind of wind. Anyway, came round a corner on my bike on the coast, just got taken out on the wind, properly like dumped on the floor, broke my right collarbone, didn't have any other, pretty much no other scratch, no other mark on me, just straight on that collarbone. So that was end of May last year, in Girona, had some, and so got it plated pretty quickly 3 days later, which was fantastic. Massive thanks to Dave and Saskia from Bike Breaks in Girona, who very much helped deal with that scenario. Because it's funny when it's great living in all these other places, and it's great while everything goes well, but suddenly when things go wrong and you don't speak the language, it's
very difficult. Oh yeah, daunting. I can imagine. Anyway,
so got it plated end of May last year, and then just started that long road to rehab another story. I mean, I don't think I ever really got back. For whatever reasons, we just didn't get back to a great place last year, and I think that was probably a lot of the relationships and other things that were going on at the time. Anyway, but decided then in December, the x-rays I'd had throughout the year had shown it had healed. I spoke to the surgeon, and he was happy to remove the plate for me, because it wasn't causing me any issues, but I think I was kind of thinking, I'd lost so much time in the swim and couldn't get that, like, for some reason I was 6 to 8 minutes slower in an iron distance swim than I had been before the break. And look, there's loads of reasons for that, but I was kind of half putting it on the break. And it was just, you know, as when you've got a piece of metal in there, it was just more sensitive. Yeah, that's right. And so I had this opportunity with it being December and over Christmas. I was going home for Christmas, so I wouldn't be doing much, you know, I was having a bit of a break anyway. And the surgeon was happy that it healed and stuff. So he was like, yep, we can take it out. So December 18th, I flew from, yeah, Challenge Daytona straight to Barcelona, landed in the morning, went in the afternoon and had the surgery to take it out. And that was all great. He was super happy and it had gone well. And then, you know, spent a couple of, you know, pretty chilled over Christmas, mm-hmm. With family at home. Got back to New Zealand and then sort of started building up the training early January, and again started really steady with the shoulder and that sort of thing. And yeah, all was going well. We sort of was just starting to get ramp it up, and again, you know, it was sort of my first few weeks with Julie properly, and just starting to see the fitness was just starting to come back and see a few glimmers of form, and the swimming actually was going really well. Which is always something I never normally say. And I literally woke up, it was the 2nd of February, woke up in bed, lying on my right-hand shoulder in pain, and it painful as in it woke me up. And I was like, oh, that's a bit, that's kind of pretty, doesn't feel very good. And it had been a bit, my shoulder had been a bit achy in the mornings when I woke up, but then I'd get up and it would loosen off and
once you moved around
of it.
Which you sort of expect, you would expect that.
Totally, you know, I was still kind of not very long from surgery, but this was kind of a sickly pain where I was like, oh, that does not feel good. And got up, and of course I had a run to do that day, so I was like, right, just get out on your run and see if it eases, as we do as triathletes. I struggled to get dressed because obviously I could not move my shoulder at all without it just making me want to vomit. So got dressed, went for a run, and got about like 200 meters down the road and went, this is not happening. Turned around, walked back, bawling my eyes out kind of thing. But then still did the whole thing that day of going, it'll just ease up, it's just muscle, rah, rah. Went to the hospital in the end. They looked at it movement-wise, said, yep, it's just muscle, you haven't done anything.
Wow.
Went home, woke up on Monday, and I was like, do you know what, I'm not convinced about this. Went back to the hospital, almost had to force them to do an x-ray. They did the x-rays still came back and they said yep there's nothing wrong there, you haven't broken it, it's just muscle damage, we'll book you into the soft tissue clinic. And again, this is like 3 weeks time, and I'm like, no, need to do this now, athletes, this is my you know, this is my life. And then it was only through Scott Molina, who I believe is stuck in Noosa at the moment.
He is indeed.
Yeah, although not a bad place to be stuck.
No, he's not upset at all.
It was through Scott that he's had a good contact, who is a shoulder specialist, and he went online and looked at my x-rays, and then, you know, within the hour rang back and sort of said, no, are you sitting down? No, you've got a stress fracture through the bone. So, which was a bit of a, I mean, I guess, look, it probably obviously explained why I was in so much pain. So I guess it was good to know that there was a reason behind it. And then although muscle soreness, I don't know, maybe it would have been a better option. But then the advice I had at the time, them talking through things, was to let it heal naturally this time. So, you know, you just had it plated. This time you probably should just let it heal. It's showing some early signs of healing. And we were talking, he's like, it's probably only 4 weeks that it's going to sort of take before you might be able to be back doing things and that sort of thing. So with those time frames and everything like that, I was like, okay, I think, you know, let's do this rather than having operated again.
Surgery again. Yeah. Third time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So obviously I was in a sling and then I mean, the first week I couldn't do anything anyway because it just was so painful. But then, you know, slowly got back on the bike, but very much sitting upright and that sort of thing. Flew out to Vegas, decided to still go out to Vegas because I wanted to meet Julie and actually spend time with her. And so we were going to carry on with all those plans. And also I thought it's better to be in that environment as I'm rehabbing.
Yeah.
So went out there, was sort of doing all the training I could, keeping it immobilized, doing all the right thing. And I don't know, I guess I just got well, I then was sort of trying to speak to the surgeon and find out when I could next, you know, what the timelines were for doing things. Suddenly he kind of came back and blew things out to, oh, it's 6 to 8 weeks before you can do anything. And I was like, whoa, oof, hang on a minute. We're talking four. We're talking four. And that was kind of manageable to me for racing or getting back to racing. And now suddenly it's blown out. Anyway, we carried on. And then when I got to Boulder, we thought, right, let's just go and get an x-ray now. It's about 4 or 5 weeks.
See how it's progressing. Yeah.
See how it's progressing. And also then, can we get back to running? When can we start swimming? That sort of thing. So I went to get a, and this is the thing about Julie, she came with me to this appointment. So went to the specialist and had an ultrasound, and Julie was there, and then went to get a CT scan. And it basically showed that the bone was not healing. Mm. It was 13 millimeters misaligned, and there was a 4 millimeter gap still between the bones. And there's a lot of callus forming. And again, not the news you want to hear, because you kind of feel I've just wasted 5 weeks
all this time.
This time when I could have had this done earlier. And you know, the specialist there was saying, look, yeah, you could wait another 3 months and it could heal properly and it could sort itself out, or you could be in no different position than you are today. And you know, I think I'd probably known the last few weeks that something wasn't right, because I was still getting a lot of movement and clicking. And even Kate, when I did gym sessions, she was like, she would either be feeling my shoulder or could just hear it moving. And she's like, can you hear that, feel that? And it wasn't painful. So this was the thing, I wasn't getting any pain. And even like the specialists and stuff, when he was prodding around and playing with it, and he was like, that shouldn't really be happening, that amount of movement and clicking and that sort of thing. He's like, that's not really ideal. I was like, no shit, Sherlock, it's not ideal at all. So then we got to the point of going, right, you now need to get it replated. And this is where we started going, okay, do we get it replated in the US where I am now? And then and this was before the world really kicked off with coronavirus. So it was like, do I stay in the US, get it plated here, then stay here, do my rehab with Julie, with Kate, everything like that? Mm-hmm. Do I fly back to Spain, get it done by the surgeon there? Do I fly to New Zealand and get it done there? Even do I go to the UK and get it done? So we're trying to weigh up all these options and costs and stuff like that, because of course I don't have health insurance or anything like that. Out of pocket, which then actually it worked out that if you pay in cash in the US, they'll probably get you in pretty quickly. And it's got actually no different in price than a flight ticket back to Spain or New Zealand, plus the cost of surgery.
Okay.
Turns out that the US didn't necessarily want my money as I thought they would. And so we were struggling from the initial calls of going, yeah, we can get you in within like the next week, which I was like, brilliant. At least don't need to wait any longer. Let's get this sorted. That went out to, oh, it's going to be the 23rd of April. And I was like, not. And again, like I said, this was before coronavirus really sort of kicked in. So I was like, no, I can't wait another 5 weeks. And so then we searched around for another surgeon, et cetera, found a surgeon, managed to get in there. And literally the day after I had surgery in Boulder, they closed all surgery. Because then it started becoming this race against time, because then coronavirus did kick off, and like I said, flights to Spain and all that was shut down, and then I couldn't get back to New Zealand anyway, and then were they going to close surgeries for non-emergencies? So it was then like, heck, I actually need to get an appointment before and get this done before things do close down. So managed to get in, had it replated in Boulder. The next day that clinic closed to all non-critical activities. And at that point, the plan was still to stay in Boulder and rehab there still, and ride things out and just use the network I'd got there. And the friends, Dave and Ezra, who I was staying with, were absolutely fantastic. They was like, yep, you can just stay, you know, initially 2.5 weeks, but now it was like, you can stay as long as you need to.
Need to, yeah.
But and then a few days after surgery came out, and I was obviously, then we were all sort of in stay at home state anyway, and I was trying to stay at home and stay low key with just immune system being extra low because of surgery and all that surgery, stress.
That's right, yeah.
And then, but then suddenly, like, the calls came out that, like, you should probably, any UK national should probably try and get back to the UK.
Home. Yeah.
Borders are all being shutting. I was on a ESTA visa now because my athlete visa expired last year, and because I didn't think I was ever going to be in the States for that very long, I let that expire.
Let that go.
I was in the ESTA, which meant I had, and I'd been there a month already, so I had 2 months left, which normally would have been fine, but suddenly we're like, well, who knows if you can leave in 2 months' time. And so you probably should look to get out now while you can, because you don't want to mess around with US visas. If you get overstay your day, you're probably never coming back anyway. And couldn't get, yeah. So then it was a bit of a check of going, right, well, am I in a fit? Can I fly? Is the surgeon happy for me to fly? Can I get a flight? I'm going back to the UK.
Because how long when was that post-surgery that you actually got a flight back to the UK?
8 days.
8 days. Wow. Okay.
So I had surgery on a Monday, and the surgeon wanted to see me in 2 weeks' time to do the checkup and x-ray. And in fact, we pushed it forward and he saw me on the 8th day. So the following week, Tuesday after surgery, I went in, had it x-rayed, had him check it all. And then Tuesday afternoon, I was on a flight back to London.
Flight back home.
Which is also like
perfectly timed.
I'd booked the flights to, and also at this time now they'd restricted which airports you could fly out of to the UK. So it was only Dallas. So I had to get a flight from Denver to Dallas, Dallas to London. That was all fine. And then on like the Monday before I was due to travel and have the checkup on the Tuesday, I suddenly got all these emails saying, we've cancelled your Denver Dallas flight. And I was like, oh my God, now what happened? I'm gonna have to get in a car and drive to Dallas, and in the end they rebooked me all, which was fine. There was just a time delay of getting through the rebooking system from sending the initial email out to say that they'd cancelled the flight.
But just so much stress, you know. Going through surgery for the third time is stressful enough, but then having to deal with all the other stuff that went with it, it's insane. You must have got to the UK and just. Like a huge weight would have been released.
The flight itself was, I was quite, you know, obviously I fly a lot. That's no secret. But I was quite nervous about this flight just because of everything else that was going on and that unknown. You know, you suddenly packed on a plane with loads of people, and I have just had surgery and all of that. But the other thing, like with the surgery as well, like going in it for the third time in less than 12 months, was that also America do things very differently. Like with Spain, I'd gone in the day before to see the surgeon, and they'd gone and had blood tests, then I'd go in and they'd keep me in overnight, and then you'd get released the next day. Here it was like, yep, turn up 9 o'clock Monday morning. You'll have surgery at 11. It'll be less than an hour. You'll be out by 12. You'll probably be awake by 1. We'll be releasing you by 1:30. I was like, what? he was giving me the drugs that I'm going to need for the next few days. And it was quite funny because it means you have to have someone with you. Like Dave, you have to have a driver to obviously get you home. So Dave, bless him, came, and I was late going into surgery, so I didn't go until about 12. And then again, I must have come out 1-ish. And then I think the first time I woke up, it was 1:30, and it was really weird because I knew that it wasn't like they were kicking you out. There was no pressure to get you out there, but I was obviously I was obviously conscious in my head that I had to wake up from the anaesthetic, and I had to get myself in a place where I was awake.
Get out of there.
So obviously I remember waking up the first time and like talking to them and having this conversation, but then I've obviously like passed out again for another like few hours. And Dave said, he's like, so in the waiting room where he was, they had, I guess, like an airport arrival board or a departure board where it had the patient's name, and then it showed you what state of surgery they were in. And so it had gone green to say I was out of surgery, but then it just like stayed green for like several hours as I was obviously sort of going still in and out of consciousness, but you know, still being aware every time I woke up, like, I've got to wake up. You've got to wake up, Laura. You've got to stay awake this time. Don't let the drugs send you back to sleep. You've got to get out of here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, it's the worst feeling.
And they also had, I had a oxygen pipe in my nose and things like that. And obviously they're taking your blood pressure and your heart rate, and that you're hooked up to a machine. And the nurse came in and she said, "Oh, I think we don't think we need that oxygen in your nose anymore." I was like, "No, cool, that's fine." And then as I'm laying there, I just kept hearing this alarm going off on the machine behind me. And I would look over my shoulder, and one of it was heart rate. And that kept, every time it dropped below 40, that would set enough alarm. But I was kind of wasn't too worried about that, because, you know, resting heart rates for athletes, it's probably around there for me. But the other one was your oxygen. And that kept dropping and going an alarm. And after about four times it had done that, the nurse came back and she said, I think we might put this this oxygen tube back on your nose." And I was like, yes, please.
Thank you.
I'd like to breathe.
I don't need that.
Oh, yeah. God.
But is everything on the right track now as far as the shoulder's concerned?
Oh gosh, I mean, who knows with me and my shoulder. I hope so. I think so. I'm back, like, again, Julie's been great, so I'm back. I'm now, what, we're coming up to 3 weeks post-surgery. I've been back on the bike, I've been back running, I've got no pain and that sort of thing. Right. I'm back doing rehab and stuff like that. I would like to get some physio treatment on it, and I'm in post-surgery, so officially I probably can get physio, but it's just hard in current climate to know if that's the right thing to do. You know, I'm working with a physio on Skype remotely, but it's not the same as getting someone looking at that scar tissue and that sort of thing, and the tightness of the muscle. So, and you know, and if all things were in a good place, I would be back in the pool now. The surgeon had cleared me to do that, and so I could be back swimming, but obviously nobody is anyway, and or very few. So, but yeah, and I guess that's why it's also, this time is a bit different for me, because I'm coming back from injury, so every day is just, I'm still seeing, I am on those improvements, and I'm getting fitness back, and
it's a good feeling.
Yeah, I guess. And I think that's made a huge difference. So yeah, so, but yeah, touch wood.
continues in the same way.
It's okay. And I've got, I did speak to the doctor here in the UK and just said, "Hey, look, this is what's happened. This is what's, I'll need to get an x-ray in another few weeks. How do I go about that with current things?" And she said, "No, that's all still going on. You're considered post-surgery. You're considered that needs to get done." So yeah, we'll book you in, and fingers crossed that all goes through. I mean, that's another 3 weeks. Who knows what's going to happen between?
Well, this is true. Yeah, no one knows. That's right. I'm on like every second day.
Even morning to afternoon. I know.
Crazy.
A lot of people have said, but you know, aren't you lucky then, it's the best time to be injured? Yes and no, there's no good time to be injured. Let's just put it out there. It's always shit
injury
being
suck
injured,
under any circumstance,
whatever time of year or whatever is happening in the world. But yes, it does mean that I do not feel, I want to get back to fitness. I want to be smashing out training, you know, not smashing out, but I want to be doing training sessions where I feel in form and I just feel fit, sort of thing. But the thing is, I don't need to necessarily, I can take it easy or do it properly.
Not rush.
There's no rush to get back there. And again, Julie has been great in that, in terms of very much keeping me in check. Even like, she sends me out on a walk and she's like, "Stop walking so fast."
But we were talking before, Laura, I think it's a really important message that you're giving now, and it's great that you've recognised you are injured, and often as athletes we can't help ourselves, and most of us when we get injured do go back too quickly, too much too soon, and we end up with another injury or another niggle somewhere else. So this is sort of forcing you to do it correctly. But I also think for all the athletes out there, whether they be professional athletes or age group athletes, this is a perfect time just for maintenance. You don't want to be out there doing those, like you said, those crazy sessions where you're smashing yourself and compromising your immune system right now. I think as athletes, we're always fit. Don't you like how I put myself in the athletes section, even though I've been retired for six or seven years.
Oh, come on, you're F45. You're more pro than most of us.
Ridiculous. But you know what I mean. Like, I think we know how to look after ourselves. We know how to be fit and healthy. We do it every day of our lives, you know, for most of the year. But I think it's the most important thing for all of us now is to make sure that we're fit and healthy, but not to start sliding down that other side where we start doing things that will compromise our immune system.
Totally. And look, like, because there's a few things there. One, health, sport and activity is good. One, mental health in this time, but also that physical health. And it does, some level of activity and exercise helps our immune system.
Definitely.
But as soon as you go too much, too far, it starts compromising your immune system. And at the moment, with what's going on, that we do not want that. You do not want to have a compromised immune system. No. So that's one reason why you do not need to be smashing out stupid, ridiculously hard sessions. And the other reason is there's no way you can maintain, like, and this is coming from someone who raced a lot.
Yeah.
There is no way you can maintain that. And we don't know when the end point of this is coming. So why are you trying to make, and a lot of athletes, oh, I don't want to lose what I've done over the last 5 months or whatever it is. And it's like, well, you won't. You just need to back off and tick along for a little while. And then when things, you know, it's not going to be like we wake up tomorrow and the world goes, oh, yeah, we're fine. We're solved. The world's open again. Races are back on. And like suddenly there's a race next weekend. It's going to take several months anyway. So you're going to have time to get back up to it.
Prepared. And that's right.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the other thing that I've realized is, and it's interesting, like listening to David McNamee talk on a few podcasts as well. And, you know, he is in complete shutdown, obviously, like we said, he's in Girona. And okay, it might change if this changes in the UK and I have to be, like I said, I'm not very good. I have a treadmill, but I'm not very good on a treadmill runner. But I might have to get used to that very quickly. And that I think I probably will struggle a bit with that. At the moment, I can still get out and run, but I am on the bike indoors, and I'm just loving it. Just makes me, it's gone back to making me realize why I do the sport. Like, I'm loving just
I
want to race. Do not get me wrong, I can't wait to get, you know, I can't wait to get to Roth in 2021. I can't, especially having missed it last year with the collarbone.
And also with
Julie, and I can't wait, I'm excited about what that holds, and I can't wait to get back on a start line for sure. But at the moment, it's like, actually, I'm just like, you know, and again, people will laugh. Not all the time, but I'm quite enjoying doing an indoor bike session and being on Zwift, because it's actually working at things that I don't, that sometimes with outside riding, you don't often get to work on.
No.
And, you know, and there are little challenges, and there's, you know, you're trying to get to the next level on Zwift, or you want to unlock a different bit of kit and stuff. And, you know, there's things that keep it interested, or you can do, you know, you can like, I'm going to do Monday afternoon, I've got an easy hour recovery spin. I'm going to send that out on social media and say, look, if anyone wants to join me, it's super low key. We can all stay together, which is a function they have. We can have a chit chat, you know, and it's open to friends. And then there's other workouts that I'm going to do throughout the week and stuff. And I'm actually loving that and loving being in the gym. And yes, I'm missing swimming, which is again another thing I thought I would never hear myself saying. And I did consider panic buying an endless pool. Not that I could afford it, but I did consider it. And I'm going to be looking at ways I can maybe get a paddling pool in the garden and things like that, or and that sort of thing. But yeah, I think just with the injury, and you know, I'd still be coming back from injury anyway, and just learning different things about myself. And it's not glamorous, and I never said, you know, I've always been one that said, if I have to do all my training on an indoor bike, I'm going to quit the sport, because that's not why I do the sport. I love riding my bike outside, and that's and riding outside and seeing places and seeing that, and that is still very much the case. But it actually made me realize that I actually am okay at riding indoors, because that's my option at the moment, and that's what I'm choosing to do. Yes, I could be riding outside, but I've decided I don't want to do that, partly with the shoulder at the moment, but partly in the circumstances. And I use at the moment my one form of exercise to be my run outside, because that's a lot better. But yeah, I'm okay with training inside, and yeah, can't wait to get outside. I can't wait to get back training fully, but I'm enjoying what I'm doing at the moment. And I think that goes around a lot to, again, Julie and friends and the support that you're getting from people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, look, talking about Roth, you just brought it up before. You missed it last year because of the injury. Now, of course, with the recent announcement that it has been cancelled for 2020, you're going to miss it again. I mean, obviously you knew that the announcement was coming, but when you actually did, when it was officially made, so when Felix actually did make that announcement, bit of a heavy heart?
Yeah. I mean, yes, just because, yeah, I knew that. I mean, I knew it was, especially when they cancelled the Olympics, like you're not, you know, okay, Roth isn't the size of the Olympics, but it's a flipping big race.
And it's a big race, that's right.
You just knew with everything going on in Europe, it probably wasn't going to happen. Now, but yeah, that does. So I kind of expected it, but it didn't make it any easier. And more, you just feel heavy-hearted for Felix and the team in Roth, because it's their one race a year, and yeah, it's a massive race for them, and it's a massive race for the town. But it's such a family-friendly, welcoming event, and like I know everyone on that team there, and I know them all as friends, and so. Yeah. It's hard to see it from that perspective of seeing what it means to them and how much it hurts them and the loss and the decisions they've had to go through to get to this place.
Couldn't imagine.
And then, what they're doing, I think, is incredible. And I have a lot of respect for Roth and everyone I've spoken to who don't know Felix and the team as well have just been so impressive. And like, it just makes us want to race it more. And things like that. But yeah, it's sad to see it when you know the people involved behind the scenes. But I can tell you, and you know this as well as I, 2021, if you're not on that list, you're going to miss out, because it's going to be absolutely mental.
It will be crazy. No, I'm already, well, as I said, I already tried to rebook my flight for next year, but of course, Qantas won't let me book any more than a year ahead. I'm going to have to. So I'm going to have to wait for that one.
This is a crazy thing about Roth. Like, as soon as it was announced, my homestay was on, who is family, you know, and she was on Messenger to me going, oh, it's so sad, but let's catch up over Skype. And she's constantly telling me what's going on in the family, and we keep in touch. And she's already like, you're in for next, you know, of course I'm in for next year with her, because she wouldn't let me stay anywhere else in the world anyway. She disowned me. But it's all that sort of thing that you just, it's a real shame. But, you know, I think I've got a lot of respect almost more now for how they've handled it, how they've communicated with people, how they interact with the triathlon community. I'd love to know German a bit more, because I think there's been probably more coming out in German than
German
with
than
again
English,
around
right.
it
yeah,
than
yeah,
English. No. But I think that's all, it's all been positive. And also, you just want to see the people, don't you? Like, we always have, you know, like last
15 years
last year,
I think I've been going. It's
and you would go back. And like, you walk down the street and everyone comes up to you, and you know that, you know, the same people that have seen you every year for the last 15 years. And it's just great catching up with people when you're there and seeing the team as well as the athletes and stuff. And then the race is almost like
the weirdest thing for me right now is we are in the beginning of April. So it's April, and Roth isn't till July.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's really going to hit, because no one even knows what the hell is going to be going on in July. I mean, obviously life's not going to be normal, but I'm assuming I'm going to still be here in Australia, stuck here, not even allowed to go anywhere. Then I think that's when it's going to really hit home, that things are really different.
We need to do it, depending where we are, and I'm assuming, like you said, we're all going to be stuck. I'm going to be in the UK, you're going to be over there. Vix is in New Zealand, Felix and that lot are in. We should organise some party, virtual,
big virtual Zoom party,
Skype, Zoom, whether we all get on our bikes and ride for a bit, and then we all crack open table. We could do a virtual table running.
Table run. Oh my gosh! Yeah, the table run. Those that don't know what we're talking about when we talk about the table run, it's the after party of Roth. Felix, the owner of Roth, the race director for Challenge Roth, does a table run, and we can't say much more than that, can we? If you want to learn more, you have to come to Roth and see it.
If you want to learn, you have to come to Roth and see it. But I can tell you, it is the biggest race of the weekend.
Oh, it ages me 50 years every time I watch it. What are you talking about? Oh my gosh.
No, that's just your partying afterwards and coming in at 4 a.m. the next day.
Don't give away my secrets.
I'm not drinking this year. I'm not going out this year.
I've failed every year. Every year. My home state give me so much grief the next day. They laugh and they give me grief for the entire day because every year I say the same thing. I'll be home before midnight.
midnight of the following day.
Ay, ay, ay. Now, Laura, a lot of our listeners out there don't realise, well, some do, of course, but that you are an official Challenger Family Ambassador, and you have been for quite a while now. Tell us a little bit about that and what it means to you to be an official Challenger Family Ambassador.
Yeah, gosh, I think it has been about 4, maybe 5 years now. I think... So yeah, first came when I started coming over to Europe to race. So that was basically off the back, I think, of sort of doing my first Challenge Roth all those years ago, and then just loving Europe and wanting to be based there, and then looking at races, and there are such a huge array of challenge races in Europe, and just in fantastic,
good spots, good places,
stunning places that you just go, I want to go there, and different courses. So just because they're in unique locations, just challenging, or not even challenging, but just stunning courses. And so, yeah, just ended up wanting to do a load of the races, and through working with, you know, getting to know you and getting to know the race directors, and that just developed this relationship and thought we could do something a bit more. So it's been really cool to and pretty proud to represent the brand, because I love what they are doing and what they're trying to do in terms, you know, it's like I said, all the races are in pretty incredible places. They're all different, they're all unique. There's got something you can't go to one race and go, and you know it's challenge, but it's not like any other challenge race on the calendar, because they're all so different. But there's a real, every race you go to has a real friendly, welcoming vibe. And it doesn't matter who you are, what level pro you are, what age group you are, whether you're on your own or with family, just everyone is made to feel so welcome. And it's just something that I think resonated with me. And I've just really enjoyed getting to know the race directors and the Challenge Family team a bit more over the years. And yeah, just being able to, I guess, yeah, work with them, promote the races that I genuinely love. And so that's been really cool, and very grateful and for that, for the opportunity as well.
Well, I know they love you just equally as much, that's for sure. And you've got a few other ambassadors working underneath you this year as well.
Yep. So we've got a pretty big, I think there's four of us this year. Have I got everyone? So we've got five of us, isn't there? So there's Steve McKenna, Radka, Pablo, and then Kieran.
Oh, that's right. Kieran Lindesey, of course. And then we've also got the Challenge Family Age Group Ambassadors
and the
Age Program
Group
as well, which is very cool initiative. I love that.
Yeah. And that's kind of, yeah, I mean, that just stands for what, you know, some of the races do it anyway already, and they have some age group teams and things like that, which I think is great. But it's fantastic to see Challenge do that as a whole this year. And okay, look, we're not racing, but I think there's a big thing there about community, and that you still got that connection and involvement with a group of people who have the same passion as you do.
Totally agree. Well, listen, my lovely, it has been absolutely wonderful talking to you tonight. 7 p.m. here now, and I've run out of wine. So, and I'm upstairs. So say, I'm sorry.
This is why the call stopped, because you need to go refill.
I wasn't going to tell you, but you know what? You and I are always one thing that you and I, with our friendship, we've always been very, very honest with each other. It works both ways. So, you know, I could have made up something that my husband Justin had dinner ready waiting for me downstairs, but that would be a lie. But the real reason is my glass of wine that I came upstairs here with has gone. On, and I do need a refill.
I mean, that was poor planning, because you knew this was going to be the whole bottle should have come upstairs.
I take this job very professionally, Laura, and you know I didn't want to have the whole bottle up here, but last thing our listeners here need to hear is me drunk on the other end asking questions. drunk Belinda. No, that's not a good look. We'll save that just for the after parties, I think. Oh, well, listen, it has been an absolute pleasure, as always. I mean, you and I could probably keep talking for another couple of hours, let's be honest. But I'll leave it here. We will definitely be checking in with you again in a couple of months' time, just to see how that shoulder's going, see if you've been able to get to a swimming pool, if they've allowed that little activity to start back in the world again. But great talking to you. Take care. And we'll speak to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Belinda. No, it's been great fun, as always, catching up. It's morning here, so I would have been on the wine for sure, or the gin and tonics joining you. I was on the coffee, and now I'm going to go and jump on the bike for a couple of hours. But thanks for having me on. I look forward to catching up, and stay healthy and safe, and to everyone else out there as well.
Thanks, Laura. We'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I really hope you enjoyed listening. If you'd like to continue listening and stay updated on our latest podcasts, then please subscribe. It would also be great if you could rate our podcast and leave us a review. If you have any specific questions you'd like me to ask the athletes, then please send through to the following email address, podcast@challenge-family.com. The making of these podcasts would not be possible without the wonderful help of our great partners. Powerbar, Otso, Zone 3, Lubos Bilic at LB Training, Sport No Limit Group, and VeloSoc. But for now, thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back soon for another coffee.